During the ensuing weeks, the letters grew fewer and fewer, and Betton foresaw the approach of the fatal day when his secretary, in common decency, would have to say, "I can't draw my pay for doing nothing." What a triumph for Vizey! The thought was intolerable, and Betton cursed his weakness in not having dismissed the fellow before such a possibility arose. "If I tell him I've no use for him now, he'll see straight through it, of course, and then hang it, he looks so poor." This consideration came after the other, but Betton, in rearranging them, put it first, because he thought it looked better there, and also because he immediately perceived its value in justifying a plan of action that was beginning to take shape in his mind. "Poor devil, I'm damned if I don't do it for him," said Betton, sitting down at his desk. 3 or 4 days later, he sent word to Vizey that he didn't care to go over the letters any longer, and that they would once more be carried directly to the library. The next time he lounged in on his way to his morning ride, he found his secretary's pen in active motion. "A lot today," Vizey told him cheerfully. His tone irritated Betton. It had the inane optimism of the physician reassuring a discouraged patient. "Oh, Lord, I thought it was almost over," groaned the novelist. "No, they've just got their second wind. Here's one from a Chicago publisher, never heard the name, offering you 30% on your next novel with an advance royalty of $20,000. And here's a chap who wants to syndicate it for a bunch of Sunday papers. Big offer, too." "That's from Ann Arbor. And this, oh, this one's funny." He held up a small, scented sheet to Betton, who made no movement to receive it. "Funny? Why is it funny?" he growled. "Well, it's from a girl, a lady, and she thinks she's the only person who understands abundance, has the clue to it. Says she's never seen a book so misrepresented by the critics."
"Ha ha! That is good!"
Betton agreed with too loud a laugh. "This one's from a lady, too. Married woman. Says she's misunderstood and would like to correspond."
"Oh, Lord," said Betton.
"What are you looking at?" he added sharply, as Vizey continued to bend his blinking gaze on the letters.
"I was only thinking I'd never seen such short letters from women. Neither one fills the first page."
"Well, what of that?" queried Betton. Vizey reflected.
"I'd like to meet a woman like that," he said wearily.
And Betton laughed again. The letters continued to pour in, and there could be no farther question of dispensing with Vizey's services. But one morning, about 3 weeks later, the latter asked for a word with his employer, and Betton, on entering the library, found his secretary with half a dozen documents spread out before him.
"What's up?" queried Betton, with a touch of impatience.
Vizey was attentively scanning the outspread letters.
"I don't know. Can't make out."
His voice had a faint note of embarrassment.
"Do you remember a note signed Hester Macklin that came 3 or 4 weeks ago? Married, misunderstood, Western Army post, wanted to correspond?"
Betton seemed to grope among his memories. Then he assented vaguely.
"A short note," Vizey went on. "The whole story in half a page. The shortness struck me so much, and the directness, that I wrote her. Wrote in my own name, I mean."
"In your own name?" Betton stood amazed. Then he broke into a groan.
"Good Lord, Vizey, you're incorrigible!" The secretary pulled his thin mustache with a nervous laugh. If you mean I'm an ass, you're right. Look here. He held out an envelope stamped with the words, Dead Letter Office. My effusion has come back to me marked unknown. There's no such person at the address she gave you.
Benton seemed for an instant to share his secretary's embarrassment. Then he burst into an uproarious laugh.
Hoax, was it? That's rough on you, old fellow.
Vizey shrugged his shoulders.
Yes, but the interesting question is, why on earth didn't your answer come back too?
My answer?
The official one, the one I wrote in your name. If she's unknown, what's become of that?